And now the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, Catherine Jeffords Shorey. She goes by Bishop Catherine, and she'll be speaking at Westminster College in Fulton on Thursday morning. And this is a good time to mention that I'm Episcopalian, and my sister is an Episcopal priest. Bishop Catherine, thank you for taking some time with us today. It's so good to have you.
Thank you. It's a delight to join you.
Well, you deal with so many issues, and I wanted to begin with a big one. The latest stats I saw suggest that membership in the Episcopal Church continues to dwindle. You have just more than 2 million baptized members today, about 1.9 million in this country, and that's down from 3.6 million at the church's peak in the mid-1960s. Membership in lots of mainline churches have fallen. The church has had this as a priority for years, this idea of building back membership. Why can't you reverse the trend, Bishop?
Well, the membership levels 50 years ago really aren't reflective of the same kind of involvement in Christian community that most Episcopalians and, frankly, most Christians and most people of faith in the United States, at least, experience today. The reality is that our grandparents joined institutions, not only religious ones, at rates that were far above what people do today.
Yeah.
And I think if you looked at people's involvement in those institutions relative to other ones in the community and the pace of their work lives, you would see something very different. Looking at 50-year-old statistics is, you know, we're not comparing apples to apples.
So how do you attract younger folks to join a church like the Episcopal Church? I mean, so many younger folks these days don't make commitments, as you're suggesting, you know, like marriage, until they've reached an older age. How do you reach them?
Actually, I think it's less about membership than it is about active involvement in a community of faith. And the most effective ways I'm seeing today are in gatherings that may not be in traditional church settings that engage young people at the level and with the questions that they're most passionate about. How can I help to change the world? How do I live a good life? How do I make decisions about relationship and vocation? When we do that, we have an impact, and we help people to join a community of transformation.
You know, are mainline religions in trouble, Bishop? I mean, what's the future of the mainline denominations across the country?
I think as they refocus their work, and again, in the same direction, away from how many people are sitting in the pews on Sunday morning or how many people sign pledge cards, to being present in the larger community in ways that help people to live more effective, faithful, and engaged lives and lives of transformation in the world around them, they see an impact.
We're visiting with the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, Catherine Jeffords Shorey. You know, the church's traditional and conservative wings continue to be at odds in many places, including South Carolina, where there's a big fight over church assets. Bishop, is there a road to reconciliation there?
There's always a road to reconciliation, and reconciliation requires both sides, or if there are more than two, all parties to sit at the table and begin to look for their common values. It's harder to do that when people are most emotionally active. It usually takes some time for people to cool off. Let me give you an example. I was in the Diocese of San Joaquin on Sunday, and a diocese that 6 years ago was going through what South Carolina's been going through for the last year or two. People filled with energy, and again, often meeting in less traditional spaces for their worship, but in ways that are beginning to engage the wider community. And person after person after person came up to me after the service and said, I came here from a different church, or I came and joined this church because I respect and value what you stand for. That diocese is growing because of the stance it's taken and because of the ways in which it's reaching out to the community around it.
Hmm. You know, as a female bishop, how are you received by the heads of other denominations, maybe even those who don't ordain women or support women in leadership roles?
In the United States part of our church at this point, it's basically a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
I've been received by my peers in all kinds of religious denominations without much difficulty. Around the Anglican Communion, I've been received at least with politeness everywhere I've gone. There are clearly parts of the Anglican Communion that don't ordain women to any kind of leadership. But the fact is that when I went to the first meeting of primates, the archbishops or presiding bishops of the provinces of the Anglican Communion, 7 years ago, they all spoke to me. I didn't have deep conversations with all of them, but they all were willing to speak to me. You know, face to face, we usually do a better job than we do on the internet.
That's true, I think, in a lot of different areas in life, I think. Have you had a chance to meet the Pope or even some of his cardinals, and how were you received there?
I have not met this Pope or his predecessor. I think there, you know, is some possibility that that may happen. There's nothing on the agenda, but I certainly would hope to meet him. I deeply respect Pope Francis's leadership. He's been a remarkably refreshing voice for the needs of the poor and the marginalized. I've certainly worked with a couple of the cardinals in the United States, Cardinal McCarrick in particular, on issues of Middle East peace. And I've met with some of the Roman Catholic bishops in this country. It's an ongoing conversation. We share many of the same challenges, both in terms of social issues in this nation and in the needs of the poor and, again, the marginalized. We may have somewhat different opinions about how to go about responding, but when we work together, we find usually a much more constructive possibility.
Can you envision a day 40, 50, 60 years down the road when this issue of, you know, the gender of the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church makes no difference to anybody, or do you still see that as maybe it's going to take longer to get there?
I think it depends on what context you're talking about. I think in the United States, it basically doesn't make a difference. I think in some parts of the world with very conservative, patriarchal cultural values, it may still be an issue 50 years from now. I certainly hope it isn't, but I think it's going to take a long time to change social norms and cultural norms in the most conservative parts of the world.
Now, Bishop Catherine, you were an oceanographer, of all things, before you became an Episcopal priest. That strikes me as just a long way from, you know, a long way from the ocean to your current position, or am I wrong about that?
I'm still fishing.
Are you?
Yeah. I think I'm supposed to be fishing for people rather than squid.
Where do you go fishing?
Wherever I go. When Jesus said, I will make you fish for people, I think he was inviting his followers to build bridges of relationship wherever they are, through the airport, through the grocery line, on the highway, in your local school community. Wherever you go, you ought to be a representative of the love of God present in human flesh.
How did you make your way from oceanographer to Episcopal priest?
Well, I was somewhat active in a congregation in Oregon when I was working as an oceanographer. And within a very short space of time, three people in that congregation asked me if I'd ever considered being a priest. I hadn't. It was a question that really came out of the blue. When I was growing up, women weren't ordained. Women in many fields still were far underrepresented. I was enjoying the kind of science I was doing, although the question was rising for me about where and how I was going to continue as an oceanographer in a season when the federal research budget had been slashed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a fertile time for asking that question. And the short version of the story is that it basically took me 5 years to say yes.
Could you have ever, in your wildest dreams back then, imagined that one day you would be the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church in this country?
No. I thought I was mostly supposed to help encourage other adults to learn more about their faith tradition and to broaden their perspective, and to be president of a parish and beyond in ways that were about building those kinds of relationships I talked about earlier. So this has been a surprising journey.
What did people see in you, do you think? What have you been told over the years?
I think probably the willingness to be clear about my understandings when I was clear about them, and to be willing to ask questions and continue asking questions in places where I wasn't clear. And I think my lifelong understanding that we learn more in conversation than we do by pursuing something solo.
Hmm. You know, you are in year 8 of a 9-year term as presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church. You can't seek another term. Do I have that right?
That's not correct. There's no limit on terms in this church. The presiding bishop has to retire at the general convention that's closest to that person's 70th birthday, because you can't serve past the age of 72. And all my predecessors have had to retire at the end of their terms because they were so close to retirement age.
But you aren't, so what are your plans?
I'm not clear yet. I'm still in discernment.
How long do you think that's going to take for you?
Well, the church is engaged in the beginnings of the process of discernment as well. There's a committee at work that will help to frame a slate of candidates that they expect to announce more than a year from now. That election will happen in June of 2015,
mm-hmm.
and the next term of office for whoever's elected begins in November of 2015. So it's more than a year and a half from now until that process is finished. And it's really too early for me to make a final decision about that.
But as of today, you aren't saying no to the possibility of a second term.
That's correct.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen in your church during your career as both a priest and a bishop?
I think the growth and acceptance of women's leadership as ordained people. When I was first ordained a priest, there were women in my parish who said, "Well, we don't believe in women priests, but you're okay." it happens. That change happens often by meeting an incarnate example of something you theoretically don't believe in. I think, in addition, the growth I've seen in the church members' awareness of our international character. We're present in 17 different nations, and most people still think of us as the Episcopal Church in the United States.
Right.
We help to start the Episcopal presence in a wide number of places across the globe, some of which are now autonomous parts of the Anglican Communion. And we're still present in 6 countries in Europe and in several places in Latin America, as well as in the Western Pacific. We've grown in our ability to value multicultural presence, including in the United States. There's been a remarkable growth in Latino-Hispanic ministry in the United States, not always in the Spanish language, but in that cultural idiom, or one of those cultural idioms, because our members come from many different countries in Latin America. I think a growing awareness that the task of the church is to turn outward in service and love of neighbor, and not just to focus inwardly on a beautiful liturgy, although that's very important, or on internal fights about fine points of dogma.
Mm-hmm.
That our task is, yes, to have vigorous conversations about those, but to remember that we're really here to be engaged in serving our neighbors.
What's the church's position on LGBT, you know, marriage equality as well as ordination for clergy and bishops? And how does this fit the vision of the church around the globe right now?
The Episcopal Church, more than 20 years ago, changed its canons, its rules, to say that access to the discernment process for ordination could not be dependent on gender, age, marital status, sexual orientation, national origin, language tradition, that none of those was a bar to being considered in the ordination process. So therefore, we've been at least theoretically open to the ministry of gay and lesbian people, out gay and lesbian people, for quite a long time. Marriage is not, same-sex persons is not sanctioned formally by the Episcopal Church. What we have done is to adopt a rite, a liturgy that for blessing same-sex unions that can be used in any diocese with the permission of the bishop. In those states in those dioceses where the state provides for civil marriage of same-sex persons, the bishop there can make provision, if he or she desires, for priests to preside at a liturgy like that. But we don't, as a church body, formally say, we haven't formally sanctioned a marriage rite for persons of the same gender at this point.
Do you expect that will be an issue before the General Convention in 2015 for your church?
Well, we will come back and reconsider the rite that was adopted as a provisional rite at the last General Convention, and that will certainly be part of the conversation. There is a standing commission working on issues related to this right now, and they haven't finished their work, and so I can't tell you exactly what they will bring to the next convention, but I know it will be a topic of conversation.
Final question, what's your favorite part of the Episcopal liturgy? When you get to a place in a service, is there one service, one point in that service that you find yourself just appreciating and maybe enjoying the most?
Oh, there are many. There are many.
What's one of them?
There's a prayer in our baptismal service that after the baptism, the people who've been baptized are prayed for with a prayer that asks that they might receive the gift of joy and wonder in all God's works. And to me, that's just an invitation to learn and grow and encounter the wonderful creative diversity of the world that we've been given.
Well, Bishop Catherine, the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, Catherine Jeffords Shorey, what a pleasure to have you, and we'll look forward to seeing you when you're in Missouri on Thursday morning at Westminster College over in Fulton.
Thank you very much. It's been a joy to speak with you, and I look forward to meeting you.
Thanks so much, Bishop Catherine.